This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending where you're at in the U.S. and around the world. Why am I getting a background sound? Is that your sound or my sound?
I don't have anything. Testing, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Yep, there you are. You there?
Testing, 1, 2, 1, 2.
You can hear me, right?
I can hear you. No problem.
Okay. Let's start all over again. I'm going to go 3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody. Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. If we're talking about Australia, welcome, everybody. I am Pete Caliendo, your host, and this is the show that loves to represent baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo. We have some great ones. Before we start, do me a favor, go to YouTube, subscribe. Peter Caliendo is the channel. We've got 90 plus shows there. They're all free. All we ask is that you just subscribe to Peter Caliendo on YouTube, and that will help us. If you really like the shows, forward them to all your friends, whether it be players, coaches, or parents. These are great educational podcasts, and the audio will be on baseballoutsidethebox.com. Folks, we are going down under to Melbourne, Australia. And as you know, we go all over the world, bringing some great people. And listen, the guy we're bringing tonight, 2 World Series rings. He is the first Australian-born who won a World Series, Game 4. Matter of fact, he replaced Mariano Rivera. We're going to talk to him about that, to face McGriff. That should be interesting. He's got 2 World Series rings. He's also on the national team with the Australian national team, the Olympic qualifying team. He had just coached or managed the Geelong Korean team in the Australian Professional League. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Australian baseball in general, one of the best baseball programs in the country, producing players in colleges and professional leagues all over the U.S. These gentlemen have done a super job educating coaches, setting up the foundation of that great sport. So let me welcome the 10-year major leaguer, my good friend. We spend a lot of time together, not only in international events, but also in New Zealand, working on the ISG Baseball Coaches Program. Let me introduce our friend, Graham Lloyd. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Pete. G'day, mate. It's a real pleasure to be on here with you, and great to see your face.
Hey, I was going to make that short, but you got too much. I think I only cover like a 1% of all your life, baseball life.
No, it's good to be in here, mate. I haven't talked baseball too much to anybody lately, so it'll be a bit of fun.
Yeah, it will. And listen, since we're starting with the baseball part right away, before we get into your career, let's just kind of review a little bit for our folks on Facebook Live right now, and then the people are going to watch it on YouTube, which is, again, in the U.S. and around the world. Let's kind of talk about Australian baseball, a little bit of history maybe, or just a background on how baseball's set up there, because it's a little different than how we set up here in the States.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Talking baseball-wise, there was, I suppose now there's been over 30-odd Australians, 34, I think, that have made the big leagues.
Wow.
We had, at one stage, the biggest crowd to any baseball game. That was the 1956 Olympics, because obviously that was an exhibition game, and everyone was in watching the game, and I think there was about 100,000 people. So we had the record for as many people going to a baseball game as any. But we unlike America, don't have our sports going through our colleges and schools. It's more of a weekend, individual teams that you have, and there was between 10 and 20 teams that play in each state, and they play probably 30, 40 games against each other during the year to find out who's going to be the premiers. So it's a little bit of a different system. Obviously, our guys, as you said, we've been lucky enough to get more coaching, better coaching as we go along. I think that, it's a testament of how much that the people who have gone over to play baseball in America have come back and learned the game and help support the game and move it forward in Australia. since they've got back. So hopefully I can help do that as well. And, you know, we create a great an Australian team for the next decades.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I want to go a little bit in your childhood in a second here. Congratulations, by the way. You just went on the Australian Baseball Board, the Australian Baseball Federation Board. That's a great honor.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. You know, becoming a director on the board is it's certainly an honor. And, you know, I've really it's sort of taking a different tact, I guess, from the on field. And hopefully that I can, you know, impart my knowledge with the board as well. And it's a newer thing for me. Obviously, I'll be learning a lot of stuff from the people on the board as well. So hopefully they can learn some things from me and we can work together and create something special over here, hopefully.
Absolutely. You know, because, you know, especially with a federation, you know, success of a federation is obviously, you know, the people involved, but it's a business and also, you know, baseball side that has to work together in order to grow the game, because it does take money, take sponsors, takes a lot of different things to grow the game. Speaking about growing the game, when you were a young kid, talk a little bit about when you grew up, how you got interested in baseball, you know, what levels you played at and how you progressed a little bit. Because then next thing you know, you made it to the big leagues, 10 years, I believe.
Yeah, it was one of those things that happened. My sister had a boyfriend that played baseball. He said, come down and have a game. And that's how it started. You know, I put my hand up to pitch. Like, I think the first week we didn't even have nine people. So I had to play in like the under 15s and I was 10 years old. So that was an experience. And the next week they put in an ad to say, you know, we need under 13 players. And nine people turned up, which was perfect. And I put my hand up to pitch and it started then when I was 10 years old. And it was, you know, baseball was pretty obscure in Australia at that point in time. And it wasn't one of the traditional sports anyway. But it's come a long way since then.
You know, when you first started, obviously you had to progress. So did you end up going to high school, college? And how'd you get the pro ball?
Well, no, I played down in Geelong and I moved up to Melbourne where like the bigger division was to try and get to be the better baseballer that I can be. And then I moved back down to Geelong and I was an electrician down there. And funnily enough, the owner of the electrical company was also a baseball player and cricket player. So I got in there and I became an electrician, but also helped my baseball career. But the reason I was signed was there was a scout, Wayne Morgan, with the Toronto Blue Jays, came out to come and see me play. And he offered me $5,000. I said, no way. He came back the next day. He said, $6,000. I said, all right. So, that, you know, then my professional baseball career started. So
here we are. We've been together that long, you know, many times at international events, you know, together in New Zealand. And I don't remember the name Wayne Morgan coming up, but it could have because I'm getting older and I forget some things. But Wayne Morgan, just so everybody understands, when I was the Belgium national team coach, I was one of his scouts in Europe. And because of him, we were able to get, at that time, the Toronto Blue Jays, we were able to get coaches and managers. Bob Mambouquette came. We had Pat Tabler. We had
my first pitching coach, Bob Mambouquette.
Small world, isn't it? And that's my point. Is unbelievable how the game of baseball is worldwide, but yet it's so small by just having a simple conversation. When you got to the States, okay, so you signed. Now all of a sudden you got to go to the States. How was that adventure? Because that's kind of changed. You know, I know you're not coming from the Dominican Republic. Okay, you speak the language. You're educated. You understand a lot of things that goes on in the States. It's very similar to Australia, obviously. But there had to still be some issues that you had to deal with, the things you weren't really sure how to handle.
Well, I guess I was a little luckier than a lot of the kids that go over these days because I was 20 when I was signed. I'd been over to America with junior Australian teams a couple of times. So I'd not just been stayed at home and, you know, just seen Australia and that's it. So I traveled a little bit. But playing wise, it was amazing compared to Australia. You know, in Australia, I played 12 games all year and I'd pitch every one of them. So, you know, that's it, 12 Sundays or 12 Saturdays. And then that was it. That season's over. But I got to spring training and I pitched in about 15 games in a month and my arm was hanging off. And then they said, you pitched so well, you're going to Myrtle Beach, in South Carolina, which was low A, I think, instead of rookie ball. And I said, oh, that's great. And they said, you got 140 games. It's like, oh my God, 140 more. And my arm was just hanging off already then. So the physical differences was just enormous compared to how much baseball the Americans had played and compared to, you know, us just, you know, training twice a week and having a game on the weekend. It was a different world. So, you know, things have come such a long way from then.
That'd be interesting to know, you know, as far as when you all of a sudden got into this routine that's pretty heavy on games, the adjustments you had to make, the type of training you had to change your training program, your recovery program. You had to change a lot of things because otherwise you could have broke down if you didn't make some changes, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it was at that time, you're just learning your body. And I'm 6'8", so I had a little learning to do. So it was, you're trying to learn your body. You're trying to work out what's going on and, you know, keep your mechanics together so you don't break down. But by that, like August, I mean, I was just throwing the ball up there. It was like a powder puff, I'm sure. You know, it was certain times, but you got through the times when you know you weren't feeling well and you started to become a pitcher. And I think at that time in the Blue Jay organization, we had a 4-day rotation. So these kids were going out there every fourth day. So throwing 100 pitches.
Did you start as a reliever and then?
I was a reliever, but you know, all our pitchers were tired, right? So it's a tough thing to do. And you're out there and I'm throwing like 40 or 50 games where, you know, I've never thrown more than 12 and that was, you know, once a week. So now you're throwing, it was just such a big change, you know, apart from driving on the other side of the road and you know, a couple of different trees and be careful going out in the woods. There could be bears and stuff. But, you know, there's a few changes there. The booster clubs, they were wonderful. I remember, you know, just thinking how wonderful, like for minor league players, from kids and people from all over the world, the booster clubs used to give us little meals and you know, and help us out and days off and stuff like that. So it was a wonderful experience being in the minor leagues. I really enjoyed, you know, the camaraderie and, you know, I mean, some of the places I stayed, there was four other roommates, you know, we only had two bedrooms. So, you know, these sort of things, you know, some guys are sleeping in the corridors and some people are sleeping on the couches. And, you know, it was a wonderful time. Back then, you know, we were just loving playing baseball and doing what we were doing. But, you know, some of the greatest times, once you get to the big leagues, it's a little more serious.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say hello to the Aussie Sparks. They forwarded our Facebook page. Said, great chance to see Graham Lloyd speak on baseballoutsidethebox.com. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate it. Great baseball in Australia. You're very lucky, I believe, as a country to have somebody like Graham, not only a super individual, love the guy. He's just a great person to talk to all the time, but obviously great baseball mind. During the minor league career, were you able to avoid injuries before he got to the big leagues?
No. I probably would have had Tommy John because my career started a little earlier. They hadn't gone into the, because I tore that ligament, but we tried to rehab it. So I missed a whole year, basically my second year or third year. I can't, second year, I think it was in Myrtle Beach. I threw like three games or something, but you know, I came back the next year and I did a lot of, you know, strengthening exercises around that ligament and, you know, hopefully everything else took. And, you know, I got to be able to pitch again and it seemed to be working okay. So, you know, you can get through without Tommy John, but I don't know how much the tear was on that ligament, but it was a little bit different back then.
Go ahead. Keep going. No, you're good.
No. I was just saying, like, you know, going through that situation of not pitching for a whole year, I was watching 140 games on the side, you know, and I was a young player, 22 years old, 21, 22. And I think I learned more about the game that year sitting down, watching, listening to everybody than I did with just playing, because, you know, sometimes you turn off because you know you're not going to be in the game, so you're not really switched on as much. Sometimes we had different rules, like in the big leagues when I was with the Yankees, John Wetland, there used to be a 5-inning rule where, you know, you had to clap before a guy got to first base, otherwise you were going to get pain or water. So there was some sort of, you know, that's a foul. So there was some sort of punishment for not make sure you got your head in the game. Sure. So it was very interesting, some of the teams that I played with and how to keep you into the game. But my opinion on just watching 140 games, I really started to learn the game and understand what was going on. And you know, it became a lot more clearer to me. And when I came back from that injury, it took one more year in Double A, and then I was in the big league. So mentally, it really helped me a lot.
Awesome. Love it. You know, interesting to know also, when it comes to, you know, you deal with a lot of players in Australia that may have possibly going to college, maybe sign, you know, a scholarship to go to college or professional baseball, and you know a lot of these guys have worked with them. What's normally your advice to them before they get to the States to kind of help them prepare for baseball in the U.S.?
Well, you know, I actually had a call from one of the kids I pitched, well, it was a pitching coach for in the Australian team just the other day. And he said that people were after him signing him. I'm saying there's really not much going on right now, you know. Right. So, I mean, you don't even get to play even if they sign you because there's no minor leagues at the moment. So, you know, for the time, you know, things, my advice might change a little bit. But the big thing is I feel as though, you know, if you can go to school, and that's certainly one path a lot of Australians are taking now is going over to college and playing baseball and going that way and improving their baseball, as well as, you know, going to college in America is a cool thing, right? So unfortunately, we lose them over there and they don't want to come back to Australia. Right. But it's one of those things that with you know, college is one pathway to go. It's not for everybody. There's a lot of kids that sign straight away and then go into the professional leagues. I just feel as though I'd like to see kids wait until they're a bit older to sign. You know, I've seen some young Australians sign with a lot of talent that really didn't get a go because they, I guess baseball-wise, just as we were saying before, it's just haven't played as much baseball. And when you haven't played as much, it's very, very hard to catch up straight away. So, and you know, some of our kids, they need to grow up a little bit, get a bit bigger, stronger. And but it's very hard not to tell a kid to go ahead and go out there and get signed for, you know, $500,000 or $1 million if they're 16 years old. I just feel as though that it's few and far between those guys compared to what they can do, and they've changed what you can do with the draft now and how much money each team is allotted per player. So things have changed a little bit there, but my main thought is, you know, if you're good at school, go ahead and go to school. You know, big leaguers, they don't, you know, scouts don't miss big leaguers, you know, bar health, injury and all that sort of thing. You know, it's a great time to get your education, have fun, college, just imagine those great times and stuff like that if you want to go over to America. But you know, there's some kids that they just want to sign and go ahead and do that. You know, obviously it's up to them and their families in the long run. But for me, I'd say stay, you know, go to school if you can. If not, hang on as long as you can, because, you know, I mean, as I said, you know, scouts don't miss big leaguers, and you're going to get a chance as long as you don't get injured and those sort of things, you know, unforeseen things that happen. I think the best thing is, you know, going to school. You know, I would have loved to have done that over there too. But, you know, I was 20 years old. I was a Sparky for 4 years before I signed. So it was a little different for me. But, you know, I was lucky enough to have my boss sign off early on my ticket to make sure I was an electrician. If things didn't work out. And his last line to me was, "You can't eat baseballs, Graham. Just remember that," which is very, very true, right? So,
what did you say to him after 10 years in the big leagues?
No,
I can buy a lot of baseballs right now.
No, but the what was behind it wasn't lost on me. And it's sure. very true. And, you know, I certainly had something behind me if things didn't work out well with baseball, but at least I had a train behind me there.
That's a great point, because, you know, there are a lot of young people who, you know, baseball's in their minds only, and they forget that you've got to have something to fall back on. One, you don't know if you're going to make it to the big leagues where you can make some pretty good money. But two, even if you make it to the big leagues, you know, some careers don't last as long as others. And now you got to fall back on something. So I think that's a great point for young men. What were some of the challenges you had during professional baseball, especially in the minors, some of the challenges you had, you know, throughout that minor league career that you had to overcome?
Well, obviously the physical one first was just the length and the 5 months and 140 games was just physically exhausting, that's for sure, and just getting used to that. After you got used to it, it's all fun and games, but getting used to that first year was really tough. The food was great, had plenty of food. The trees were different, the driving on the other side of the road. American people, wonderful, go out of the way to do anything and help. It was a really cool experience. All the new players from, they were in the same boat as me. They just come signed out of high school, college or whatever. And then we're down there at spring training and, it's just getting to know people, but the one thing that we all gravitate towards, it was baseball, and we've got that in common, which, opens up a lot of doors straight away. I met new players from all over the world, Dominican, Puerto Rico, all over the place. So it was, a melting pot of baseballers and just getting to know your trade with, and mostly they were big leaguers, all the coaches and stuff like that. And, you can go back and check out films on them. You can these days a lot more than you could back then, but it was just a really cool experience. I enjoyed every moment of it.
How old were you when you made it to the big leagues?
I was 25.
What was that like, that call when you first, you got the call and then all of a sudden you show up at the stadium? What was that like?
Well, my call was in spring training because I was rule five from Milwaukee to Milwaukee from who was I? I signed with the Blue Jays, and I was rule five to Milwaukee from the Blue Jays. Yeah, so, I was at spring training and it was, you either make the team or don't. And I remember Phil Garner taking me out to the batting cages up in Arizona there and saying, I just want to tell you before the media come up and cussed you that you made the team. It's like, oh my God, I've made the big leagues. And it was that one moment, it's like, geez, it's like winning the lotto, it was just a moment of like, I couldn't believe it. And I was lucky enough to have Dave Nilsson on the team as well, another Australian to share it with there. And it was a really amazing experience. And they all took me out that night. I remember there was Jesse Orosco, Bob Gibson, John Chaha, Dave Nilsson. And the next day they put me in the pitch and they left me in there for a while just to make sure that I knew how to pitch when I'd had a hard night the night before. but it was a really amazing experience. Obviously I can remember that like it was yesterday.
Absolutely. You mentioned Bob Gibson. Obviously, he was a starter. Did you pick his brain? Did you talk to other guys? Some of the things maybe you learned from some of these guys early on to kind of give you a little edge and a little help.
Well, the one conversation that night was one that certainly wouldn't be apropos for today's baseball, but I'll give it to you anyway. So I think Jesse Orosco asked Bob Gibson, how would you pitch John Jaha? And Johnny Jaha is quite a big man. And he looked at his throw three in his ear and then three on the outside edge.
and that was Bob Gibson, no doubt about it.
Very stoic. And it was like a matter of fact. And, that's what he would do. That's for sure. I didn't even know who Bob Gibson and who he was at this point in time in my career. I've been in America for 5 years. it's like then I read up and I see all these things on Bob Gibson. It's like, wow, what a pitcher, what a man.
What, Well, you know, the other thing is, you know, I looked at the bio and we're talking about, you know, you were 2 World Series, won both, you got 2 rings. You know, game 4, I mentioned in the introduction, you had the, and if I said it correctly, you replaced Mariano Rivera to go after McGriff because McGriff's a left-handed hitter.
It's one of my biggest accolades.
You know, think about
it. They took him out to put me into the World Series.
Is there anybody that's ever replaced Mariano Rivera? I mean, you don't hear that very often.
In that situation, there's probably less than a handful of times in his career that's happened. That's for sure.
What was that like? Explain that now, because you're getting the ball. Now you've got to go after McGriff, and you just replaced, you know, Rivera a few times.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the nerves are going on the sideline before you're getting called in, obviously. But once you get in there and get into the game, it's like, okay, let's do this now. You know, you've trained and played all your life for these moments, it was, you know, let's go after it. And I mean, Fred McGriff, what a wonderful man and player he was. And I've seen him a few times and he's given me the old, you know, cut eye look. I respect him totally. And I think he, as I said, you know, a great baseball player. But I was lucky enough to get the best of him on that one. He hit pretty hard to Jeter, but we got a double play that ended that inning. One of the other big things was I got to hit the next inning. My first at bat in the big leagues was in game 4 of the World Series.
Wow, first at bat.
So it was just, you know, for a start, Joe Torre and Zimmer were talking and it's like, okay, sit down, Graham. You've done a great job. I got McGriff out. I'm pretty happy with myself. And then they're going, No, what they'll do, they'll probably pinch hit Ryan Kleska. So they'd want me for the first hit over the next inning. So they decide, no, you go out there. Okay. So I've got to get ready to hit, right? So I look up and the catcher's throwing the ball down the second. So I've just stepped up. I'm in the dugout. I go, holy crap. I got to get all my stuff. So I grab a bat. I grab a helmet. The bat's like Robbie Alomar's. I'm going, how's that helmet? You know, Robbie Alomar, whatever. So I've grabbed the head and I've got the helmet. The helmet's like moving all over. I'm going, I'm not ready at all to hit. So I'm walking up and they're looking at me, where are you? You know, so I get in there. I said, sorry, guys. And they look at me like, what an idiot. What's going on? So I get in there and then I look up for the first time at the pitcher and I see behind the wall of people. Because as a pitcher in the big leagues, you're looking and you're focused on that. Right? Yeah. You know, you're down your home plate. You've got lots of things around there. Obviously, the fans are behind up the top there, but your focus is down. So I've looked and turned around and I see this sea of people out through the outfield. And I think it's one of the most amazing moments of my baseball career because I had no nerves. No, there was no expectation of this pitcher that's never hit before and hasn't even got his own bat or the helmet that fits properly. And I'm in the big leagues in the World Series.
In the World Series? And who was pitching?
In the World Series. And it was Steve Avery on the mound. So, there was one out, I think I might have been the second out. But I swung out my butt the first pitch and I just missed it. I fouled it straight back. And then he jammed me in the next one. I think I hit it to Chipper Jones and he threw me out. I had all the... I get back to the dugout and all the pitchers are standing there waiting to high five me because I didn't strike out. So the pitchers' rule is don't make us look foolish, right? So
absolutely.
Don't make us look silly. Don't make us look foolish. So I hit the ball, so they were wrapped in me. So they were all high fiving me when I got back to the dugout. But then, you know, I got Klesko out the next inning. Wetland comes in and finishes it off. And it was one of the biggest comebacks ever. I think it was 6-0. We were down, and we came back to win that game. So it was,
yeah, and that's the reason they kept in also because Klesko's left-handed hitter.
That's right. Yeah. So,
Graham, through all this, I mean, wow. I mean, that's an incredible story. First of all, just pitching in the World Series, but then having to hit when you haven't hit yet. There's a lot of pressure in baseball in general, and you've got to deal with a lot of young players at all levels because you've been with all kinds of players. How did you deal with the failures of the game, whether it be on the mound at that particular time because you still had the pitch or even when you were pulled out of a game? to get ready for the next day. Any advice there for our young people, young coaches to teach?
That is a hard one. That's a tough one. That one comes along a little bit later on, I think, in most people's career. But you know, you do have to let things go. You got to be able to let it go. And you know, I remember giving up back-to-back home runs on two sides of America in two nights. You know, I gave up a home run to Mo Vaughn and then one to Griffey in Seattle the next night. You know, one in New York, one in Seattle. And two losses in 2 days. I threw two pitches. Even the people
that might be
me,
a record. Two pitches. Jeez, two
yeah, look that one up, will you? Yeah, two tied ball games of two sides of this America, and then bang, yeah.
Wow.
I think I might have got a rest after that. But, you know, it was these type of things, it is being able to let it go. It is being able to go out there and know what you did wrong or what you even didn't do wrong. Or you threw a great pitch, but maybe where did you go previously in that batting, in that at-bat, to make that not such a good pitch. So, you know, it's all these things that it's learning about it. You know, I think about different things. If I wasn't pitching well, yeah, okay, I've given up these runs, but why is it happening? Or am I not executing my pitches? Is it my mechanics? Is it my head? Is it what I'm eating? Is it all these type of things? So, you know, you check off this list and go, okay, there's no reason why I shouldn't be pitching badly. What's going on? It must be my arm or something. Or so, you know, you do have ways to kind of negate, you know, having a bad outing or something like that. But the main thing is, I think that, you know, making mistakes, if you make mistakes, you make them off the plate. You don't make it on the plate. That's a big one with, I think, the big leagues. Things have changed now. They've got a thinner, they've got the plate, the size of the plate now, but now it's up and down. The game's changed there. And also, you know, pitching minds change as well like that. You know, you start to throw in different places in the strike zone. So I think you evolve with what's going on. You know, if you're throwing in one place and you're getting hit, don't throw that place anymore. You know, work out where in the zone that, oh, they hit that ball there, or they don't hit it here, or what are they looking for? As I was saying, you know yourself. You know, I got 6'8" to know of myself and what I'm doing, so I got to know myself the best I can.
And you mentioned, you know, today's, you know, that's a different ball game, especially statistics also, because now they got a lot more video, a lot more analysis of pitches, you know, spin rate and curve rates and all this. And back then you didn't have as much. How did you prepare for a game? You had your team game plan for every hitter, right? Before every series. How did you plan? And then how did you make adjustments during the game? Because maybe, you know, that plan wasn't working, and then you had to make some adjustments according to the hitter.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd have our meetings, and you know, you know what you'd throw. I mean, obviously, this guy can't hit a splitter. Okay, great. I don't have a splitter. What else doesn't he hit? So you've worked for what you've got, right? And lefty or righty, or as a lefty and a specialist at that point in time, I would know basically who I would probably face. And I know where in the lineup, I know situations, what was going on. I'd know who would probably be the pinch hitter. Mm. I'd know, you know, the game itself would dictate what the score was, whether you could give up a run, whether you're looking to get an out here or strike someone out. And these sort of situations are the ones that occur in baseball all the time. And it's, you know, and that's when the coaches come out and then make sure that you're on the same page as what we need to get done here sometimes. And that's why they talk about these things. So just to make sure that we're all doing what we need to do to give ourselves the best chance to get out of a situation or win the game.
You know, and as a reliever, obviously I believe you could have pitched maybe twice in a row. I don't know if you pitched three times, you know, at all. But then you had to recover too, because as a reliever, you're throwing 2-3 days sometimes. What'd you do to recover best you could faster, and some advice to our coaches there?
Recovery I'm sorry, broke up a little bit there, but I'm thinking you're just talking about mainly recovery the next day and stuff.
Yeah, recovery, because you know you had to pitch possibly maybe 2 days in a row, or sometimes three. I don't know. But you had it's not like a starter where he's got 4 or 5 days to recover. You've got to be ready for the next day.
Yeah, I think that was one of the big things too that I understood, and I was very lucky to have Jesse Orozco next to me in the bullpen, learning and understanding how to get ready, how much to throw, how much not to throw. Being ready for a situation, that situation doesn't occur, then shutting it down instead of going forward. I think that all these things that you learn as you're going along, you know, I didn't really think, oh, am I ready for big leagues when I got to the big leagues? It's like you're still learning as you going, right? You think, oh, now I'm ready, now I can go to the big leagues. It doesn't work that way. There's lots of things that you still need to work on, but understanding, you know, but pitching in the big leagues is a little different than pitching in the minor leagues. You know that the hitters, they won't swing at certain pitches. You know that they're looking for a certain pitch. In the minors, you know, they're up there hacking, so if it's anywhere close to but getting ready the next day after having tough days or making sure that your body is ready. It's just knowing yourself, knowing what you need to do, repetition. You do things, you think that something's missing, then you might go for a long run, or you might go for a shorter run, or you might go for sprints. It's these sort of things, that you know what your body needs and doesn't. I think I pitched 8 days straight one time. I think the 8th day, I gave up a home run the first pitch I threw. I think they gave me 2 days off, and then I was back out there again. But you know, the biggest thing is keeping your mechanics in those situations, because you know you don't throw as hard that 8th day or the 7th day. You know that. But if you keep your mechanics, and for me, I had good movement on my pitches. I had to make sure that I finished off my pitches to continue. Because if you don't, then that straightens out, and then they take you pretty quickly. But, you know, I was lucky that I had a pretty rubber arm, and, you know, I think I was in 80 games once or twice. And, you know, it's always fun to be able to be ready to pitch in a big league game. And I'm happy to say that I never said no to any coach to go out there and pitch, and I was always ready.
You know, interesting also, because nowadays you're not going to see somebody pitch 8 days in a row, 8 games in a row, I should say. I know the White Sox pitcher just last night, it was a 6th day in a row, and you don't see that very often. John Kruk was mentioning on MLB Network or on one of the games he was doing, as far as pitching nowadays, a little bit different, because as let's say in your days, you know, when you had a fastball count, you know, 3-0, 3-1, you might see more of a fastball. Nowadays, you very rarely see a fastball in a fastball count. Is that, and what else has changed other than that in the game, if that's one of the areas, if John was right?
It certainly has changed. You know, it's a little more like Asian baseball in that respect, you know. So, you know, if you can throw secondary and third pitches for strikes, I mean, the biggest thing is getting a hitter off balance. And if you can do that 3-0, especially when they're locked and loaded and ready to hit that ball, you know, it's an advantage for you. Excuse me. Yeah, it's an advantage for you. So, you know, if you can throw a breaking ball on a 3-0 count, all you got to do is make a miss by that much. So.
Love it. You know, the other thing I was thinking about too was the umpires, because, you know, a lot of young players coming up, sometimes, you know, even I was in independent ball, there's a few young guys in independent ball coming from different countries. They weren't used to dealing with the umpires. They weren't really diplomatic. You know, they were already, you know, upset early. I think that's something you learn as you go along. How did you deal with the umpires when you didn't like a particular call? Did your catcher do that, or did you handle it? How did that work?
Well, I never, I mean,
you know, like, was there a little look you gave them? I mean, I'm not talking about going after them, but something, was there something a little disappointment?
You know, I mean, knowing what I know now, you know, it's tough to be an umpire, but you understand.
Very hard.
Sometimes you think, how the hell can I miss that, right? But right. but it's tough to do it. And if you're the one out there too, other people are saying, how does he miss that? Because it's just human nature to err. And, you know, these guys do a great job, but I never really got on the umpires. I mean, I remember staring at one time when I threw a ball straight down the middle. We called it a ball.
Right, that happened.
I mean, even the hitter came up and said to me, "What the hell? What did you do to him?" Yeah. I said, "Nothing." And this was a spring training game. So, you know, that was just a brain cramp or, you know, what, he blinked I've or whatever it was. I mean, and it happens. It happens.
Absolutely.
So, but I just looked at him and was like, okay. And we just moved on. You know, I didn't try to upstage him or, you know, upset him or whatever. You know, I think we should all show each other respect on the field no matter what. Obviously, sometimes, you know, it goes beyond that. And then you have to protect your teammates sometimes. So, but, you know, I think as you know, things have changed a lot with umpires. I think it's a bit different than it used to be. I think there's more amicable. I think there's more conversation with players and umpires and stuff like that, which should be, you know, it should be amicable. Obviously, you know, they've got a job to do and we have to.
What did you do in the off season? So when the season was over, you know, did you take time off? That when you started, what was kind of a routine that you got to get ready for spring training? And again, I'm not sure how it worked in the different times. You know, you hear a lot of times now, at least I used to hear, you know, well, guys used to go into spring training to get ready, but now guys are ready for spring training. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I was very lucky because I came back to Australian baseball and we had the Australian Baseball League. And and being a reliever in America, I needed some more innings sometimes and less. So I was a starter. So, you know, getting over here and that really helped me get my strength. And, you know, as you were saying, like one pitching coach said to me, how many could you go today? I said, 9. He said, 9? I said, yeah, I'm ready. He said, okay. That surprised him, right? Because, you know, as you say, you get ready in spring, but I was ready. And there was nothing wrong with being ready, too, like that in spring training. You know, it's a good feeling to go in there like that. And I suppose I did that also because, you know, the first few years I found out, oh, my God, I'm done in spring training. But now I was ready. So I was ready in spring training, but I was even more ready when the season started. So I certainly learned that lesson.
And I'm glad you brought up the Australian Baseball League because I want you to talk about that. The league, kind of the foundation of the league, how it's set up, type of players, maybe the level of baseball that we're talking about in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting better and better each year. You know, obviously this year, I think they had 8 different models of what they could do to try to make this year's ABL happen. But we have professional players from Asian teams. I was the manager of Geelong Korea last year, which is a really cool experience. You know, there was minor leaguers and some major leaguers that come out from Korea that came and played and actually played in our league. And, you know, so it was a really Cam Vail, our CEO, brought in that team and also brought in the New Zealand Tuatara, which is really expanded. And it's made it a more exciting event. And the ABL is really taking off with that. So, you know, who knows? Right now, we could put another module forward and say all the minor leaguers come over to Australia and start another league.
Yeah, but a lot of young people, you know, looking for jobs.
But there should be, there's a lot of you know, young people looking to play some baseball this year. So that'd be cool. But you know, they're going to have 2 hubs, I think, the ABL. And I'm not sure how long it'll be, but it'll probably be in January, our league this year. And there'll be 4 teams in New Zealand and 4 teams in Australia. I think that, and I actually think the team in New Zealand might be playing 7 inning games instead of 9 inning games, and the ones in Australia playing 9 innings. But, you know, with all these changes and whatever, no matter what, it's just good to have baseball back up and, you know, getting there and running. And I think, you know, that, you know, sometimes I'm a bit of a traditionalist in some aspects, but you know, getting to play baseball, let alone not, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, and you know what? It's been such a pleasure to have baseball on TV. You know, we've been watching some of the Korean Taiwanese games. Nothing against Korean Taiwan, but we like seeing the American games, the MLB games.
Yeah.
You know, it's made our life a little easier for everybody, especially in the U.S. that follows baseball, you know, during the pandemic, because we've been in just like you guys have. You know, in the Pro League, how many games are you talking about during the season there in the ABL?
Well, I think it'll be a revised sort of number of
now,
games.
But not, normally.
Not, No, normally it's like 40 or 50 games.
Okay.
So, you know, it's from November till February. So, you know, you're playing 3-4 games a weekend, that sort of thing, 4-game series usually. And, you know, the caliber of players, we've had big leaguers playing in the last couple of years. We've had, American big leaguers, Japanese big leaguers, Korean big leaguers. So we've had people from all around the world coming over and playing in our comp, and it's getting better and better. You know, Aussie kids are getting better, and it's a very international league, you might say, right now.
Yeah, baseball is a global sport, no doubt about it, and that's awesome. I think it's great. I love international baseball. You know, you mentioned the Geelong team. I mean, here you are managing. This is an all-Korean team, correct?
Yeah, it was all-Korean. So
we got to talk about that a little bit. Yeah, interpreter. Give us the experience a little bit, because you had to have spring training, right?
There was no spring training. It was straight into
games so right away. You didn't know
straight
the
into games. So, you know, as the manager, it was really probably the first few weeks and whatever. I was just getting to learn to know the players and what's going on. And it's very lucky to have three astute coaches from the Korean baseball teams over here. And I just, kind of learnt what was going on for the first few weeks, and then kind of, started to manage a little bit here and there, and also, do what I could. But the language barrier, sometimes, when you want an instantaneous thing, something happening, it makes it a little tougher. But, you get these things sort of happen, but then you make sure it doesn't happen again. It was really an interesting sort of year, that's for sure. And great young players. There were some players fighting for jobs to go back. Some guys getting ready to go to the big leagues, and some minor league players getting their work in. And same with the big league players. But it was an enjoyable season. Managing for the first time, that was a different world.
Yes.
And I liked it. I thought it was really cool. It's good to have people around you, obviously, that know what's going on too. So it was good that they knew their languages. But so I had a lot of fun. And it was back in my hometown in Geelong,
nice.
Where I grew up. And so that was a lot of fun as well.
Well, it's great too. We all know if you're going to be a good manager, you better have good people around you because you can't do it all yourself. Interesting enough, Asian baseball very well. I love it. I love Asian baseball. But specifically Korean, what were some of the unique things that you liked about how they did things? Explain that a little bit to our audience that may not be familiar with Korean or Asian baseball.
Well, they're very, everyone has their, baseball's baseball, there are certain intricacies and differences. It wasn't their full-on training apart from the games, because it was their off season a little bit, so I didn't get to do, but I've seen their trainings during their spring trainings, and theirs would be what you call, they do buckets and buckets and buckets of balls, more so than even I would say the Americans, or maybe some other Asian teams do the same, but they will do ground balls for ages. They will, there's specific things that they pick out and choose to work on with some person or some player. And, they really find out what the weaknesses are and strengths in certain ways, but they will, practice to the nth degree on that weakness to make sure that they get rid of it. But they really are very regimented, very articulate, very smart about the way they play their baseball and what they do. They're very, very good at baseball in so many ways. I think that the biggest thing that I guess that I saw was that their ability to, the respect that they give each other. Mm. It's really interesting, the cultural thing in that respect.
How about the respect they give the manager?
Yeah, they give this, absolutely. But it's also a hierarchy through their age groups as well in the team, as in how old the player is. And that's really interesting sometimes because, you know, some player might be 25 and someone's 19, he's having a better year than him, but the 25-year-old better get respect from the 19-year-old, you know what I mean? It's very interesting in how they if the player is older, you must show respect, yeah, no matter what.
Well, not only, you know, and I was mentioning the manager, but you're 6'8". I could imagine the first time they saw you, you know, they said, well, respect is easy because we're not going to say anything to this guy. But no, that's normal. The Asian people, the Asian, you know, players, they're so respectful, you know, even of their equipment and everything they do. What about the pitchers? Since you being a pitcher, what did you think about the pitchers, how they pitch, and maybe some things maybe you learn from them or maybe some things you try to make them do different? Anything there?
Yeah, their pitching to me was outstanding. I love the way that they use the whole body. They really get their whole body through their action towards the zone, you know, and I learned a lot about that. I wish I had been able to do that because – you know, I didn't throw hard. I threw, you know, 90 at the most. I was high 80s and whatever, but I was mostly movement and location. These guys really come through with the ball. I think that if I had to use their sort of wind up and their mechanics, I might have got a little bit more out of myself as well. So I really have looked into that and still working with that.
I think it'd be interesting. You know, I've always said, you know, if I had a young son, I'd send him to Asia, you know, because I think they, like you said, they utilize their body to the best of their ability. And it'd be kind of cool to get to learn how they do that. And also, you know, if you have a young kid, I think he'll come back very disciplined by the time he comes back home. If he spent, you know, a year playing in Japan or Korea.
Yes.
I think it'd be great.
Yeah. You know? No, it was a great experience for me. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's something that I'm very happy that I did, and then kind of moving on to the next step now. I'm not sure if I'll be managing or coaching in the future. It's this pandemic sort of put a lot of things on hold, but when there's a break in some things, you know, some other thing pops up, and you know, I've got new business things coming up here and there, and apart from baseball, but you know, hopefully. Well, I'm back in the directorship, but also bench coaching for the Aussie team is, you know, I really enjoy that as well.
And before
As David Nilsson said, it's the easiest gig in baseball, Lloydie. Don't worry about it.
And there's another great guy. I know I don't know him like you do, but I've got a chance to meet him. You know, Dave Nilsson, what a super individual. Obviously, playing the big leagues, managed, you know, the national team. It's got to be a thrill working with him. Before we got about 10 more minutes, and you know, I'm going to talk about the project you're working on, you know, with the glowing baseballs and other sports products. Before we do that, it'd be interesting to get your take. You know, you're watching Major League Baseball. There's some rule changes. You're already familiar with one of them. You know, everybody was talking about it for a while. Now more people seem to like it, and that's the man on second extra inning rule, because, you know, we're familiar with it internationally. But what's your take on that when it comes to the Major League game, having that rule in there?
Well, I guess it all comes down to dollars and TV, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
So, you know, there's that, you know, if we got to weigh it up one way or another and, you know, keep the game as pure as it possibly can be. But it's interesting to see it in the big leagues now, that's for sure. There's certain things that
I thought it would
never
have been there.
It'll never happen. But, you know, as we've found out in so many things, it all depends on where the dollars come from, right? So I guess, you know, TV rights and, you know, also no one wants to watch a four-hour game these days. No one wants to watch, you know, things go too long. I think that, you know, 2.5-3 hour games are probably, you know, 2.5 hour games would be perfect for the TV people, I'd say. Mm-hmm. You know, it's those sort of things, those factors that can change, you know, the purest of our games, but also for us to continue on and to evolve, and we have to adapt. We're all adapting now to this new world,
COVID,
and we don't know what's going to go on. But to me, it's just a little thing in the big world of what's going on now. And it kind of went by without me really even caring about that rule.
So true.
I heard the other one where the reliever goes in that has to face, you know, a certain amount of players. So I like that. I think that's great. Maybe not on those nights when you give up home runs, right? But
yeah, because then you got to stay for three hitters no matter what.
You can say, yeah, that's what I mean. Not so good. There's no hole to dig in.
How about the game in general? The game in general, today's game, things maybe you like more about it or less? You'd like to see some changes in the game at all? How it's played?
I think that, there's so much talk about how it was, how it is. Things evolve. I'm just watching the game, loving the game, and watching it evolve as well.
Yeah.
As long as both teams have an even playing field, I don't have a problem with it.
That's great.
And and things will change no matter what. And and if it's wrong, then change it back. No one says it has to stay the same.
Yeah, and great point. I've never heard it that way, and I really like the way you said that, because the baseball has been a game of slow change in many ways, but it's been a great game. And if we have to make changes along the way, as you said, they'll make changes. And if not, they'll go back if it didn't work. Because I have a feeling the extra inning rule is going to stay just for the 60 games because it fits for this season.
Yes.
I don't think they're going to continue that. I think the DH, they might continue. They might keep the DH, things like that. I'm trying to think, obviously they're going to keep the three-pitcher rule. But they're always trying to improve the game a little bit. How about speeding up the game? Because internationally, we've also tried to speed up the game a little bit. But we've also introduced the instant replay, and that really doesn't speed the game up. It slows it down. There's benefits on both sides.
Yeah. I really don't like the replay when, someone goes into the hole and shortstop and turns around and throws a BB at the first baseman, and it's a bang bang play, and it's just a spectacular play. And you call him out, and then they look
and
back
and
safe by it, and then you've just killed the whole crowd. The whole crowd's been going, and now they're just, the crowd are the ones that are getting shook up, because their emotions are being thrown up and down all over the place with the replay, and you kind of lose that vibe of the whole stadium. And that's the one thing I don't like about it. I like having the right call made.
Yes.
But I think that on aesthetics and how great a play looked and magnificent someone just did that, and then it's a bang bang play, if he's out or safe. I mean, but also it could mean the difference between millions and nothing too, right? So
yes,
so that's why they brought it in the first place.
And it's interesting, that's a great perspective, because as you're talking, I'm thinking about that, if they were going to do anything. Now I'm just thinking outside the box, this is nothing, always trying to think different. I'm thinking, well, if you want to keep the fans in the game, then just have a buzzer or a red light at first base, right? Nobody calls it, but the electronic device says out or safe. And then for sure. And then the fans are in the game still.
Yeah. I like it. Yeah. I mean, and
like
that'd be evolving, right? I mean, there has to be a little sensor on the guy at first base glove, the catcher.
Yeah.
Also a sensor on the base, and then whatever clicks first is the winner.
And with today's technology, you could do so much. The other part of technology, and then we're getting close to the end here, is the possibility. I think it's inevitable. It's coming. I don't know when, but the electronic strike zone. Kind of your thoughts as a pitcher on that. I know there's, different thoughts on this on both sides.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because, a strike is not always what they think a strike is. And it mightn't look like a strike, but it's actually a strike. Like big breaking curveballs. They could be hitting the knee at the front and bouncing before they even get to the back foot. So, but that's a strike. It's hit the strike zone.
Yep, once it crosses the plate,
it's across the plate. Now, if they're going to get used to seeing balls bounce and still call strikes, I mean, I don't know if that'll ever happen. But it's like everything else, it's probably inevitable down the road. And there might be, you know, they might have more than one camera showing that strike zone, so they can see, you know, that. As long as they keep it consistent, it's got to be consistent.
And I was going to say that if it was consistent, would Graham Lloyd prefer to have that, or would he prefer to have an umpire? If you were pitching.
Well, the umpires love me and they went off at him. So, you know, I might get that edge. So, yeah. You know, it might be tough, right? You know, someone that signs a few balls for somebody might get an edge or not. Who knows? It's happened in the past.
And you know what? You bring a good point up about an edge, because nowadays the catching game is changing, because how you receive is the most important part. Absolutely. Mm. I've seen a lot of calls on television, man. They are balls. But the way they're received and brought in a little bit, they call them strikes. Yeah. I don't know why. Only the umpire can explain that. But there are changes
Good catcher can get you five calls in a day. You know,
absolutely.
Or more. You know, I mean, and once something's hitting, if you catches on to know exactly what that umpire wants and what he doesn't, makes a big difference, man.
It's funny how it's kind of weird. Things that when I grew up as a kid watching and playing, and even in high school, things like, you know, catch the ball and then bring it here, they always told us don't do it. I've got videotape after videotape. Nobody can tell me major league catchers don't do that, because I've got the video tape. And man, they're not just
beginners.
They're moving. Yeah. You know, I mean, they're coming up. I mean, we're taking guys that are real good, moving up a lot. Yeah. I talked to Ryan Cienko, the Dodgers catching coach, that they don't like that, but I've seen a lot of other teams do it. And remember, that's something they told us, don't do that, right? But now they do it in the big leagues.
Yeah, they might say they don't like it, but you watch the big league catcher and see if they like it. You know?
Yeah, especially if they get the call, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, I like it now.
Graham, this has been awesome. Listen, I want you to end it with a couple things. One, talk about the charge ball, if you want to show it.
The charge ball, yeah. I've got this new business that I'm with, and it's really, really cool. It's made of rare earth minerals, and it's a baseball. Actually, we've got like 9 different balls. There's an NFL football, there's a soccer ball, a rugby ball, Australian rules football, there's NFL ball. So, but I'll show you this thing. It's, you can see that glow in there, do you? That charge?
Yes. Yep.
See that? So that's the charge ball. I can't see, but it comes with this bag, and it's called the charge bag, and it comes with its own battery that sits up in here, and it's got LED lights in here.
So you can play catch at night.
What you do is you take out the battery, you put the battery in there, and then you see these. If it's not too bright, see the lights go on. And then you've got 20 seconds and it's fully charged.
Wow.
So, and it charges for, it'll charge for the rest of its life. As in,
Can it charge a Tesla?
We'll work on
20 seconds. That's cool.
Yeah. Well, if you got the Tesla, you'd be happy, right? Yeah. So, no, it's really a pretty cool little kit of stuff. And then when it comes out of the thing, it's all charged up.
And you can play with that if it gets a little darker, play catch with it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it's for. You know, Dad comes home from late work, you know, work late, and he goes out and throws out the back with his son because he can still see the ball. I remember being on the farm doing that and nearly knocking Dad's teeth out because he couldn't see the thing. Shearing 100 sheep a day, and then come home and try to catch me and throw as hard as I can at him.
I love the idea, and not out yet, but we'll be out possibly in
September,
the US.
Like October. Yeah, it'll be. It's we're doing a thing with America and also probably Asia, but it's going to come out in September, October, and be chargeball.com probably. But yeah, I think. Think it should be a lot of fun. It's a cool little product, and I'm doing it with a lot of cool people that I'm from Geelong, actually. It was made down there, and got some really cool business people after it, and so it's exciting. We'll see where it goes in the next month or two.
So from major league player to managing the Korean team in the Australian Baseball League, now to businessman, man, you're adding all kinds of stuff to your resume. That's good.
Instructor with Pete Caliendo.
Yeah, that's right. ISG Baseball. Well, as soon as COVID's over, we got to do it again, man. That was a lot of fun. Hey, listen, last message to maybe coaches, players, and parents, just in general about the game. Sometimes we take a little bit too serious, especially with young kids. Your advice?
Patience, fun. And what do you do, man? You excite people. When you're out there, you go out there. It's a game. Let's go out and have fun. You know, I mean, the drills that you do and stuff, you know, you got me excited when I was out there with it. And it all matters. It matters that the coaches, you know, go out there with that sort of attitude. And you have to be exuberant. You have to be, you know, go out there. I mean, otherwise, you know, if you want it to be dull and nothing going on, then go ahead and do that, you know. But I kind of like the way that you're out there and having fun. Not getting too serious about this game, especially when it's younger kids and stuff like that. You know, we all have lessons to learn here, there, and everywhere. But right now, patience is the big word. And I think that, you know, just let them go out there and have some fun as in baseball wise. I mean, you know, we have plenty of time when you grow up to be serious.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. You know, and it's a game where, you know, parents and coaches, I'm sure, understand it, but sometimes it's hard to express it. You know, you're going to fail more than you do in other sports. So, you know, you've got to encourage kids. And I just can't see, you know, you go to a practice, I've always told coaches, you know, you almost have to feel like you're exhausted by the time you're done, because you've thrown all the energy you can be. That way you get the kids more excited that way, you know, and they're happier and they're moving around more. There's more things happening. So that's what our message is all the time, Graham, trying to get coaches' education. And I know in Australia, they do a great job of educating coaches there.
Yeah, we've been very lucky. We've had some great dealings with Major League Baseball, and they've sent some tremendous people over in the past. You know, Rod Carew, Chili Davis, just to name a couple. You know, it's been wonderful to have all these people come over and help us out, and also ex Aussie big leaguers too. And you know, a lot of the players that played over there have come back and are helping out with baseball, with coaching and stuff like that. So it's, you know, it's a great time, I think. And baseball is a non-contact sport. So, you know, looking towards the future, you know, we're one sport that, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get out there maybe quicker than some other sports. Hopefully everything gets back, but you know, we can keep playing and keep enjoying our game.
Absolutely. And folks, think about it, you know, and I may be off a little bit, but I believe Australia is what, 40 million people? Approximately
25.
That's even lower. Yeah. And I thought 25 million people, 34 players in the big leagues. I don't know how many players in college baseball. And then if we were to look at the numbers, and we're going to have on some other guys also from Australia, I believe on Sunday. If we look at the numbers of
Coming on Sunday,
the Blue Sox.
Ramirez.
It's the owner. Yeah, we're going to mention Manny Ramirez, the owner and manager.
Adam Dobb, you have to.
Yeah, both the owner and manager are coming on. But, you know, think about the number of players that you guys have playing baseball in Australia is not like in the U.S. We have 26 million players. It's not like in the Dominican Republic. There's, you know, I don't know how many, maybe 20, 40,000 players in your country, and yet you're producing unbelievable players. Well, that comes from the development program. That comes from your coaches, comes from the organization, the way it's set up, all that. I mean, I think Australia does an outstanding job at everything when it comes to the game.
Well, thank you very much. You know, obviously, we've always got something we can improve on, but I think that, you know, we're going in the right direction, and appreciate your kind words.
All right. Great way to end it. Graham, man, this has been awesome. I knew it would be a great conversation. Had a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Great to talk to you, Pete.
All right. That's Graham Lloyd, New York Yankees. I'm going to mention the Yankees, but he was with 6 or 7 clubs, 10 years in the big leagues. He's on the director with the Australian Baseball League. He managed the Geelong Korean team in the Australian Baseball League. Again, 10 years in the big leagues. Great, great conversation. Loved it. Thank you again to Graham. Thanks to our producer, Brian Crock, with the Lineup Media Group. Thank you to obviously, our fans in the U.S. and around the world. Thanks for joining us on Facebook. We really appreciate it. Don't forget, subscribe, YouTube, Peter Caliendo's. Do us that one favor, and the audio will be on baseballoutsidethebox.com. Folks, this has been a great show. Really, thank you for joining us. Thank Graham again. God bless you, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.